Hey, Crime Salad listeners. Welcome back to another episode of Crime Salad, where we talk true crime. My name is Ashley.
And I'm Ricky.
And we're so glad that you could join us. Thank you so much for supporting our show. Now, this week's episode, we are going to discuss the Fox Hollow Farm murders. Now, just a heads up, this episode will discuss violence, murder. This content may be unsettling for certain listeners. So this story takes us to Westfield, Indiana. And there lived the Baumeister family, who appeared to be just your average well-off family. Herbert Richard Baumeister was one of four children, and he was the oldest. He was born on April 7th, 1947. His father, Dr. Hubert E. Baumeister, was an anesthesiologist, and his mother, Elizabeth Baumeister, was a homemaker. They provided a loving home with the essentials. However, Herbert, or Herb, as he was called often, had early signs of troubled behavior, and it was often believed that his behavior was a red flag for what was about to come. From a young age, Herb had what was described as a disturbing fascination with death and decay. And it was to an alarming point, like we're talking playing with dead animals.
All right. That's pretty dark.
Yeah. Now, he did struggle a little socially. It was difficult for him to form relationships. So for the first few years, he was very isolated. I mean, maybe his morbid curiosity pushed his peers away. And then there was his strange behavior at school. He would display disruptive behavior, such as urinating on the teacher's desk and placing a dead crow on another's. So behavior that you wouldn't normally see.
Yeah, it's pretty odd.
Now, these behaviors caused his father to become concerned. And during his teenage years, Herb was diagnosed with schizophrenia. Despite that diagnosis, he never received the necessary treatment that could have possibly helped manage his condition. This was around the early mid-1960s. So just keep that in mind. Patients could be placed in a psychiatric hospital, often for extended periods of time. And there were also various treatments like psychotherapy, electroconvulsive therapy, and the early use of antipsychotic medications.
Right. So it's nothing like it is today.
Right. And what I did find interesting, too, was during this time, there were many institutions that were overcrowded and underfunded, which led to poor living conditions. So sometimes these treatments were harsh, and patients, they didn't seem to have a lot of say in their care.
Honestly, though, with the father being involved in medicine and not letting him get the treatment that he probably needed, was probably just because of his knowledge of the industry in general.
That's a good assumption, because like you said, he was in the medical field. I didn't find anything as to why he didn't receive treatment. However, living with this condition, it didn't stop him from graduating high school and attempting to go to college. So in his early 20s, he lived on his own and he enrolled at Indiana University, but it was a struggle for him to fit in and to focus on schoolwork, so he dropped out, and he took a series of jobs. He worked at the Indianapolis Star, which is a newspaper company, and was also a clerk at the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. Despite showing initial promise in these roles, his unpredictable behavior and instability to get along with coworkers often led to him leaving those jobs or getting fired.
I'm curious for the jobs that he was fired, like what happened?
So I did find that he urinated on a letter addressed to the governor. And that was the icing on the cake and the confirmation as to who urinated on his supervisor's desk a few months earlier.
Wait, so he did this in school too, though, right?
He did it in school and then he did it a few more times as an adult working a job.
It's a serial peer.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As your kids get older, some things about parenting get easier. For instance, you can actually reason with them once they can talk and they start to clean up after themselves.
Really?
Well, sort of. But other aspects like having that all-important conversation about money remain a challenge. And the reality is kids won't truly understand how to manage their money until they're actually responsible for it. And that's where Greenlight comes in.
I'm listening.
Greenlight is a debit card and money app designed for families. Parents can effortlessly send money to their kids, monitor their spending and saving, while kids and teens develop confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills.
But why choose Greenlight?
Well, with the Greenlight app, kids learn to save, invest, and spend wisely through engaging games that teach money skills in a fun, accessible way. And if you remember the days of chore charts and the struggle to stay motivated, well, Greenlight's chores feature allows you to set up one-time or recurring chores tailored to your family's needs and reward kids with allowance for a job well done. So imagine how much more motivated you would have been if you received funds directly for completing your chores.
What? I never got paid for my chores.
Yeah, well, this is a great way to keep your household organized and also to teach kids to associate hard work with financial independence.
Sounds good.
Which was something that you were lacking.
Right? Me?
Yes. Millions of parents and kids are learning about money with Greenlight. And for us, it's the easy and convenient way to raise financially smart kids and to navigate life together. So if you're ready to give your kids a financial head start, try Greenlight today and see the difference it can make. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/salad. That's greenlight.com/salad to try Greenlight for free. greenlight.com/salad. When he was 24 years old, he married Julie in 1971, and he was working at a thrift store, which seemed to be a better fit for him. After 3 years of working there, he opened up his own thrift store with his wife, Julie, and called it Save-A-Lot. They had kids over the years and appeared to be normal. With their business earnings, they bought Fox Hollow Farm in Westfield, Indiana, and it turned out to be the perfect place to raise a family. The kids could enjoy the wooded area and ride their bikes around on the property. It was very private and isolated, but Herbert kept this darkness brewing inside him and, well, a second life. He frequented gay bars during the times when Julie would take the kids on a long weekend trip or on an extended trip during the summer months, staying with a family member. He would stay behind, stating that he needed to be home for their store. The business was failing, and it put some strain on their relationship.
I feel like it's hard with a couple having a business and then it not doing well. It definitely affects you.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Ricky, have you ever heard of flavored air?
Flavored air?
It's quickly becoming the leading alternative to traditional habits. We're excited to introduce you to today's sponsor, Fume. Fume is an award-winning flavored air device designed to help you ditch those bad habits without feeling left out. Imagine you're out with your friends and they're all reaching for their usual vices. Now, instead of feeling the urge to join them, you have a better alternative right in your pocket.
Ooh.
Fume isn't like other devices. If vapor was compared to sticky soda, Fume cores are closer to refreshing herbal teas. With delicious flavors like crisp mint and orange vanilla, you can enjoy a guilt-free experience. No nicotine, no vapor, no batteries, just pure, non-toxic flavors that are satisfying for your oral fixation.
Ooh, that sounds nice.
What I love about Fume is that it looks awesome and it feels high quality. The design is perfect for fidgeting with satisfying magnets, snaps, and clicks. Plus, you never have to worry about charging it. Fume continuously invests in third-party studies to ensure the safety of their products, and they're backed by doctors in the U.S. My personal favorite flavor, I'd have to say crisp mint. It's refreshing and keeps my mouth busy without any drawbacks. Join over 300,000 satisfied customers and try Fume today. For a limited time, use our code SALAD to get a free gift with your journey pack. Head over to tryfume.com. That's TRYFUM.com and use our code SALAD to get your free gift with your order today. Switch to flavored air with Fume and experience a better way to satisfy your habits. Thanks, Fume, for supporting our show. And now back to the story. Now, while it appears that he was living out this secret love life, he had a change of heart. Maybe he was stressed out in his marriage. he had a much darker and sinister goal. You see, it all started to come to the surface around 1993 when men began to disappear from the Indianapolis area. Johnny Bear, 20 years old, was last seen on his way to a job at McDonald's. Jeff Jones, who was 30, was last seen coming out of a Salvation Army rehab center. Richard Hamilton, who was 20, was last seen leaving his apartment at 2 a.m. to get cigarettes. Alan Livingston, who was 28, was last seen getting into a white vehicle on the same night Manuel Resendez, who was 31, went missing. And the last time he was seen was with friends at a nightclub. But when the night was over, he wasn't there. So in 1994, more names and faces of young men continued to go missing. Alan Brossard, who was 28, was last seen at a gay bar that he often went to. And then Roger Allen Goodlett, who was 33, went missing in July of 94 after leaving for a night out. His mother reported him missing and demanded for the police to take immediate action. However, the missing persons department had to give it at least 30 days to wait and see if anything turned up.
30 days? That is a long time.
Yeah, I mean, especially you're a parent.
Right.
Imagine how that would make you feel.
And you know something's wrong.
You know, it's completely out of character that he hasn't shown up at home.
I mean, a lot of things can happen in 30 days.
It would be very frustrating. Now, all of these missing persons were young men in the same area, and police were not sure if these men were just missing, or they left on their own accord, or if maybe they were linked to one specific murderer. It was a big question mark.
You know what this case reminds me of is Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah, a lot of people say that.
Yeah. Jeffrey Dahmer, or also John Wayne Gacy, because he targeted young men also, and a lot of them.
Very similar cases. It's really strange how it all kind of happened sort of around the same time too.
Right. Although I feel like this case didn't get nearly the amount of attention that like Gacy or Dahmer got.
Yeah, no way. Private investigator Virgil Vandegrift has his look into these missing cases around the area. And once he found out that there were close to 12 men who were missing from the area, it was shocking to him. And even more so knowing that because they were gay or thought to be gay, the urgency of finding these missing men wasn't a top priority. And so he put the matter into his own hands, especially since the police were a bit reluctant to investigate. By getting the flyers out to the public, even posting them at local bars and clubs around town, and communicating with people of the gay community in the area. While this was all happening, information started to piece together because people of the community started to come forward. A friend of a victim who went missing and who prefers to be called Tony Harris for privacy reasons, noticed a quiet man at one of these nightclubs one night, and he was by himself. He appeared uncomfortable, and he was looking over the missing flyer of his friend, Roger Goodlett, and his demeanor wasn't very genuine at all when he talked to him about it, and he mentioned how he felt very uneasy at the time, thinking maybe he had something to do with his disappearance. So he continued to have this conversation with him, and soon enough, he was invited over to his place. He went by the name Brian Smart and explained to Tony that he was taking him to his employer's home where he has a pool, and they can sit by the pool and have some drinks and talk more. When they approached the house was in a secluded area, and when they got inside, it was noticeably dusty and dirty, and there were mannequins everywhere, dressed up, posing around the house. He told him that the owner didn't want to be alone. Herbert took him to the pool house on the property where Tony was standing in the pool. Herbert got on the topic of what his interests are, and the next thing Tony knows is a hose is wrapped around his neck. Now, he didn't attack him, but he only kind of playfully put it around his neck and asked if this was something that he was into.
Oh, so like a sexual thing.
Yeah. So Herbert, in a convincing manner, mentioned that that's what he's into. He's into choking and strangling, and even asked Tony if he could do that for him. So Tony explains that he did it. Herbert lost consciousness and he ended up falling in the pool. And he would tell him that it was a rush to him. Then Herbert did it to Tony and explained what he liked about it in gruesome detail. He explained that he enjoys seeing the eyes bulge out of the face and the lips puffing up and sometimes splitting. Tony spoke up and said that he's hurting people and he's going straight to the authorities. When Tony said this, Herbert laughed and said, "No one would believe someone like you." Ricky and I are excited to introduce you to our amazing sponsor, Lolavie, the revolutionary hair care line by Jennifer Aniston. She created Lolavie to give us effective, clean, plant-powered hair products that work for all hair types. Get an exclusive 15% discount on your entire order at lolavie.com with our code CRIMESALAD. So there's so many hair care products. Why Lolavie? Well, they use clean ingredients, naturally diverted, plant-based, free from silicones, sulfates, parabens, and gluten, cruelty-free, and vegan. And just when you thought you couldn't revive your hair, they have restorative shampoo, conditioner, and intensive repair treatment. So transform your shower routine into a spa experience, strengthening your hair with every wash. And then when you're done, you can style like a star with their Glossing Detangler Perfect Leave-In Conditioner and Lightweight Hair Oil. I love using Lolavie's Glossing Detangler. It makes my hair feel silky and manageable without any heaviness. It's like giving your hair a daily dose of luxury. So why settle for less when you can pamper your hair with the best? Remember, use that promo code CRIMESALAD for your exclusive discount. Happy listening and even happier styling courtesy of Lolavie. Unlock Jennifer Aniston approved hair at lolavie.com. As our loyal listeners, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use code CRIMESALAD at checkout. That's 15% off your order at lolavie.com with promo code CRIMESALAD. Please note that you can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined. After your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them Crime Salad sent you. Now, Tony wasn't killed that night. For some reason, Herbert let him go. And Tony did what he said he was going to do. He went straight to the police. The police were looking for that house that Tony was at, and they couldn't find it. They got his name, Ryan Smart. However, that ended up being his alias.
It's weird that he let him go. It makes me wonder if he regrets not killing him that night.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because Herbert kept trying to find Tony after this incident. So he would call him on numerous occasions, asking to have him come over, hang out, let's have a repeat session. And so the family decided to put a tracker on his phone. And his comments to Tony would be very telling. He would say things like he's familiar with what death looks like. And he would explain how he would have accidents in these situations or a bad night, and how these accidents happen to at least 50 to 60 different people.
Holy cow. How scary for him, though. I mean, he's sitting there in the murder room, right? Potentially could become the next victim. That's terrifying.
Now, looking at Herbert without even knowing what he was actually capable of, he appeared to be a very kind, social-looking person. And honestly, from looking at a picture of him, he does appear to look like a normal guy.
Yeah, he does.
He was someone you would feel safe to talk to, someone who didn't give off creepy vibes, and obviously someone who made you feel comfortable enough to feel safe enough to go over to their house after the bar. But this was all intentional. His victims would take the bait and leave the bar with him to his pool house. He would slip drugs into their drinks. And, well, as TikTok would have you say, he unalived them by strangling them with a hose and would burn and dispose of their bodies on his 18 acres of land.
Jeez. And all of this went down when Julie and the kids were on their trips, right?
Yeah.
So they're out of town. They're gone. And he's just living this crazy second life.
And his wife never knew. She never had any, you know, hints that this was happening.
Or a murderer.
Yeah. Now, his wife started to grow suspicious when their son and his friend were walking around in the woods in the backyard, and they came across bones. It appeared to be a human skull and a number of other bones. It looked just like a skeleton was laying there, like whoever died there was laid there and decomposed. Herbert explained that these were the bones that his father had from medical school, and he just held on to them, kept them in the garage.
Well, yeah, that would make sense if these bones were maybe in the house or on display or in a box or something. But these are like scattered out in the yard of the farm.
Yeah, isn't that bizarre?
It's like, really weird.
Why are they out here then? Now, initially, this made sense to Julie. I mean, his father was a doctor, and Herbert never threw anything away. He told his wife that he would clean it up, and within a week, the bones were gone.
Jeez. It's definitely weird, but it's one of those things, like, she didn't know what he was capable of. She didn't see that side, right, living the second life. You would never think that he's capable of doing something like that. So you wouldn't put the two together. But then at the same time, there's all these reports of boys going missing and men going missing, whatever. You have to kind of connect the dots.
Well, a lot of people believe that she was in denial, and she was in denial for quite some time during the rollout of this case. Now, if you remember Herbert, he was trying to get in contact with Tony. He was inviting him over, saying, hey, let's have another session. Well, Tony was out at the bar, and lo and behold, that guy was there again. Tony had to have been thinking, wow, he's sitting there waiting for his next victim. Tony asked a friend to go outside and write down his license plate number, because as we mentioned, the police had nothing on this guy. More people are missing, and this has to be put to a stop. So they took the license plate number to the police, and he was not Brian Smart, but a man by the name of Herbert Baumeister.
Right. The alias.
Yeah. He was confronted at the Save-A-Lot store, and he was asked about the number of missing people in the area and how his car was located at one of the bars. But he said he had never been there. He wasn't very good at hiding his body language in front of the investigators. The officer would describe him as looking like he wanted to just fall apart. A moment where he had to have been thinking that they were finally on to me. And that guy who he let go, he has to have something to do with this.
He's a risk.
It all started to come to light for Julie once the police got in contact with her. They approached her with the shocking news that they were looking into her husband being a suspect in a homosexual homicide. This was an immediate shock for Julie, who never suspected a thing. And she would tell the police that she didn't believe them, and Julie refused to allow the search. Julie, in disbelief, would call the officer on the phone, telling them that there's just no way. He is the father of their children. He's never raised his voice at their children, never even slapped them. He never showed any aggression or aggravation towards her at all or to the family. There's just no way that her husband could be capable of being a murderer. So that only led to the police needing to get more evidence to be allowed to get a search warrant. They did do a search by helicopter using infrared light in hopes that they could find decaying of a body, but there was nothing. Now, around this time, the Baumeisters were in a bit of a marital struggle. Herb's behavior was becoming more erratic, and Julie even recalls times where he would talk about this guy named Tony Harris, the one that got away, and would say that we should be afraid of him. The business was flopping, and she had spent the holidays alone, the kids. It was becoming very financially difficult for Julie. Herb randomly closed down the thrift store and left with their one son to go on a trip to Lake Wawasee. As time went on, Julie questioned the thought that, could this all be true? Putting all the pieces together, away from the initial shock of the police knocking on the front door, the human skull her son found, Herbert's strange behavior, and then leaving home, taking their son, running away from the police suspecting him, she became very concerned, and mostly concerned for her son. She filed for divorce in early June of 1996, filed for custody for both of their children, and was able to get their son back from Herb. She was now living with the fear that her husband was to blame for so many victims who had gone missing. The divorce wasn't even finalized, and she allowed the police to search their property on June 25th. This search led to the discovery of numerous human remains on the property. Even though the trees were all grown in and greenery was covering most of their backyard, confirming her worst fears about her husband and also confirming the tip that Tony left with authorities.
It's crazy.
Human bones kept being found on the property, dig after dig, bone after bone, and the number kept growing. Dental records confirmed the identity of at least four victims that were known to be missing: Roger Goodlett, Stephen Hale, Manuel Resendez, and Richard Hamilton. During the investigation, they actually found over 10,000 bone fragments, all that were tested and confirmed to be human.
Wow.
Yeah, and are currently still being pieced together. These bone fragments were found in the backyard where they appeared to be burned and crushed. Now, as we mentioned, Herb was left. He was gone. He had their son with them. She hasn't heard from him. So the police began to search for Herb. They eventually get notified when he was found at a public park in Canada, and he had committed suicide by a self-inflicted gunshot wound. He left a note explaining the financial struggles, the flopping business, the marital problems, but never once did he mention that he had murdered anyone.
So he took the coward way out and took it all to the grave.
Yep. And his last words on that note were, "I'm going to make a peanut butter sandwich and go to sleep."
Interesting. So we can probably assume here that he heard the news that the remains were found, and he most likely shot himself for that reason.
Possibly. Now, these identified victims that have been murdered, they were in the newspaper when they were identified, and it was even mentioned along with their name and their picture that some were arrested for prostitution.
Wow. Is that necessary?
Right. And what's also disgusting is they would give Herbert or Herb the title landowner or businessman. Like, okay, you mean murderer or serial killer or monster. Like, you don't have to.
Yeah, exactly.
And this caused families in the gay community to really be upset with how the media was handling this case and the victims. It was disgusting. Now, this case even led to the question if Herbert was the cause to even more bodies that were found along I-70. This is what connects Indiana to Ohio. Victims' bodies started showing up along the interstate, and they appeared to be strangled. And it was found that they were all last seen at a gay bar. And Julie would even explain that he had to make multiple trips to Ohio for whatever reason for their business. So could this have been like an opportunity to get a few murders in?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty bold and confident to just leave a victim out on the side of the road. Like, you almost want to be caught.
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
And there were mentions that it seemed like there was a pattern of how he disposed of bodies. Most of their land was wooded, and it seemed that as the killings happened, the bodies would get closer and closer to the house. So, like, when he first started, he would put them all the way in the back of the woods, probably buried, you know?
Yeah.
And it seemed like he got more comfortable,
yeah.
Like, lazy, maybe, more confident. So this kind of coincided with, could he be the I-70 killer?
Yeah, I mean, he's killed so many people at this time, he's probably feeling invincible. Like, they're not going to catch me. I've done this.
Now, they never identified the person responsible for the murders that happened on I-70. But, you know, it kind of makes sense. Like, the gay bars, the young men, they're all like 20, 30 years old.
Well, it seemed like the police didn't really even care to look into these murders, at least more than surface level, being that they were gay.
Yeah. The case of Herbert Baumeister, a suspected serial killer who preyed on young gay men in the 1990s, continues to unfold decades after his death. Because many of the remains were found burnt and crushed, this investigation continues to be challenging. Recent advancements in forensic technology have led to the identification of more of his victims, bringing some closure to the families. As of today, they have positively identified 12 suspected victims.
That's great, but there's so many more.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that in a college in Indiana, there's just cases and boxes of remains that are just sitting on a shelf.
It's nuts.
So hopefully more victims get identified. Now, in 2023, Jeffrey Jones, who went missing in 1993, was identified. Alan Livingston, who also was missing during that time, was identified in October of 2023. And Manuel Resendez was identified in January of 2024. So things are happening. Hopefully there's more to come. These discoveries were made possible through the dedicated efforts of the Hamilton County Coroner's Office and the University of Indiana using DNA profiling techniques. And also, I got a little tea along with your crime salad, if you'd like.
Tea and salad?
Would you like to hear it?
I would.
Julie has told media that she never seen Herb fully naked, and the only time they had intercourse was three times.
He was a never nude.
Never nude. Well, that wraps up this week's episode of Crime Salad. As always, thank you for joining us on this journey into the dark and often chilling world of true crime. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. It helps us reach more true crime enthusiasts like you. And if you found this episode intriguing, please share it with a friend or a family member.
For sure. That helps so much.
Yeah, stay safe, stay curious, and as always, remember to keep your ears and eyes open. Don't close your ears, Ricky.
I'll leave them open.
Because sometimes the truth is closer than you think.
Also, check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/crimesaladpodcast, where you can get ad-free listening and some behind-the-scenes stuff, and also, what, like 30-some episodes that aren't available anymore.
Yeah, behind the cheese.
Behind the cheese.